So a lot of people ask me all the time, how is it that you do what you do being in your 40s? Well, it's a lot of hard work, but honestly, I got a lot of help. I've been going to Triple Threat Performance for my physical therapy needs for a few years now. I keep tearing this body down and they keep putting me back together again. And just recently, I joined their strength and conditioning program. And really, honestly, I don't think the mountains stand the chance this year. I feel stronger. I feel more flexible. I feel like I could go longer than I've ever had before in the past. So if you are in the Phoenix area and this sounds like something you might need or you want to up your game, check out Triple Threat Performance. That's ttpaz.com. ttpaz.com. Hey, I also want to give props to the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. You heard me say it a million times. They're a game changer. And I'm not just saying it's not just lip service. They really are. They do what they're intended to do. And that is make a guy, woolly mammoth like myself, sound like a cat coming through the woods. And really just they're game changers. I think everybody should own a pair. It should be in your arsenal of weapons. And there is no other comparison out there. They're easy to put on, lightweight, easy to carry around with you. Don't take up a whole lot of weight and room in your backpack. It's almost foolish not to own a pair. So go check them out, Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Triple Threat Performance. Today, we are going to talk a little bit about arrow setups and FOC. It seems to be not really the hot topic right now, but I see it coming and going. It's something that, you know, it's been around forever. Research has been done on it since early 80s and probably even before that I don't know of. But it's just, it comes and goes. There's always an argument one way or the other. And I brought on with me Brent Hahn of Valkyrie Archery to talk about some of the things that he's been doing, help us understand FOC and the benefits, and talk about some of the stuff that Valkyrie is coming up with to kind of, you know, battle some of the issues that we have out in the field. So how's it going, man?
Oh, pretty good.
Good. So I almost stood you up today. I apologize.
That's all right. That's all right. We got it going.
I went out this morning coyote hunting with a client and just ran a little over, unfortunately. I expected to be done in a couple of stands and kept calling coyotes in. And he kept missing, unfortunately, but he had an awesome time. So he was super grateful about it. And I think the next time we go, we'll have some luck. So anyway, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself?
Well, my name's Brent Hahn, and I didn't actually start Valkyrie Archery on purpose. It was kind of an accident. For years I was, you know, I love bow hunting and archery, and I've been shooting, hunting, you know, since I was a kid with a bow. But I had some bad experiences, like a lot more than most guys, maybe not. I don't know. Guys don't like to talk about it. But my first 5 bull elk I didn't get with fairly decent shots.
Wow.
And and so that was like – I'm in Oregon, so getting a shot on a bull here can be pretty rough, especially on the coast range. So you work all hard all season to get one shot, and then you hit him in the shoulder and it doesn't go in. But the good thing is, on a couple of those bulls, I called one in the next day, but didn't get him. And then the next guy, one of the bigger ones, I called in from the exact same spot the next year. So it was like catch and release, I guess, kind of a conservation. But no, that started a drive and desire in me to try to build a better arrow. Because I put so much, I shoot all year. I shoot every day. I'm always practicing. I mean, my life revolves around archery and bow hunting. I mean, everything I do revolves around that. When I exercise, it's for hunting. I mean, it's not for anything else. And so I'm constantly thinking about how to improve my hunting and to be more successful and improve. Like when you get to the point where you actually get a shot during the season, you spend 3 weeks to get a shot. Even if you miss a little bit, you shouldn't be just crushed with disappointment because of your gear fails. And so that's kind of where I started. My wife used to get on me years ago, like 20 years ago. Like every year, I'd have the new, latest, and greatest setup, you know. And she's like, "That's what you said last year," and you know. And so, and I was using store-bought stuff, and then I'd read the magazines, and something would come out. I'd try that, and one of the things I started doing towards the end was I bought everything retail. I'd read magazines, go to the store, order it online, pay full price, try it out, and most of the time, throw it in the garbage. So, I spent thousands and thousands of dollars, and eventually I read some of the Ashby stuff, like in the like early 90s and early to mid 90s. I read that stuff and I was like, but the weight, he talked a little bit about weight forward and heavy arrow thing, and I was like, yeah, but I mean, dude, I don't have, how do you, you couldn't even buy stuff. It was before Grizzly Stick and all that stuff came out. And so it was kind of like reading that was interesting and it worked. And I was like, well, that would go through an elk shoulder, but how do I do it? I mean, I can't, you know, I need a grinder. I need a metal shop to try to build what that guy was using. And so eventually I started modifying parts and screwing inserts together and adding things inside your shaft. A lot of guys are doing that, putting like weed whacker wire in their arrows. Some guys were putting foam in there and trying to increase arrow weight with the carbon. And I knew that the weight tubes and stuff was a bad idea because the whole idea behind carbon was it dampens quickly. And if you start stuffing things inside it, it's just like a fishing pole. It's gonna start flopping around and oscillating clear to your target, destroying penetration. Yeah, on that stuff. So, but that was the only thing we did. And putting weights in the back, that was a great one, where you could have the knock. At one point, I had 12 pieces in my arrow.
Oh, Jesus
So
Christ.
I had insert in the front, piece of all thread with three weights screwed onto it, knock insert in the back with a knock with a piece of all thread at three weights, because there was a philosophy floating around for a while that you could weight the back end to help tune your arrow.
Yeah, what was it, the New Fletch or something like that? Do you
Well,
remember
they did
those?
one, but it was I used, I think it was Gold Tip, had the weights in the front and the back. And so I was like, but then if you think about it, then you have, when you shoot the
Yeah,
bow, especially with
just bends in the
fingers,
center. Yeah.
it's bending in the center, but then with all those weights on there, it's just going to keep flopping down range. In fact, Ken Beck with Black Widow Bows did a video. I remember he shot a caribou, and his air about 20, 25 yards, slow-mo'd it, and you could see that arrow flexing like a spaghetti noodle all the way to the caribou. And it was just, I was like, God, that's just, I mean, he got it and everything, it was decent, but it was like, that's, loading up the weight was a bad idea, I thought. And it seemed like we were in a constant battle to always try to modify what was in the market to make what we need. So, and there's a ton of, and I found that there has, I thought there would be a lot of guys doing the same thing, and it turns out there's a ton doing the same. Guys are doing the exact same thing that I was doing. But I thought I was the only guy doing it because I just needed something different. I needed more weight up front. I've got a 125 grain broadhead. I'd like to have 150 grains up front. So anyway, so you're screwing and going to the hardware store and buying screws and cutting off the heads and sticking them in there. Anyway, that went on for years, years and years. Single bevel, two blades, long skinny three blades, double bevel. You know, trying everything. And I tried the weight forward thing about 15 years ago. And so I gobbed some weight up front, kept my arrow sit the same, fletching everything the same. Went up to like 175 grain head, which if that, 15 years ago, that was heavy. I mean, that was
Oh, yeah.
huge. And I missed a bull elk at 35 yards right under him. And I didn't, and I was like, that's it. I'm out. I am not doing this anymore. But it was perfect and it dropped. And I was like, I'm done with this FOC. I went, got some 125 grain heads and went out and went to another state and shot a bull.
There you
And
go.
then, about now 5 or 6 years later, I got to talking with some guys about FOC and I revisited it. But I, with a different outlook, though, I'm like, I need to change the whole system. And this is kind of where our the Valkyrie came about, was we had to develop a platform to deliver the broadhead in the most efficient, accurate way possible. And so I
Real
wanted to
quick,
build a
before we
platform.
keep on going, I'm taking this for granted that everybody knows what the hell FOC means. I just want to. That means front of center. It
It's
means
actually,
the weight. Go
yeah,
ahead.
it's
You
how
want to
where your
describe it?
balance point of your arrow is with the head on it, in front of the midpoint. Like if your arrow doesn't have a head on it, or you just take the midpoint of your arrow, if you have a 30-inch arrow, the center of that arrow is going to be at 15 inches. So when you put a head on the front of it, your balance point's not going to be in the middle. It's going to be somewhere towards the front. And that distance from the midpoint of that arrow to the balance
Are you
point.
demonstrating that? Because I can't see it in your.
I'm here
Oh,
now.
you
Yeah,
are.
I'm
There
here.
you go.
Okay. So if you, this is the center of your arrow, 15 inches
Okay.
on a 30-inch arrow. So right now the balance point is actually towards the back end with the fletching and all.
Right.
But if we put a head on it, then the balance point moves forward of center.
Right.
FOC, forward of center. It's the where the head, where the arrow balances forward of center.
Little bit
We
higher.
found that the
There
further you go, the more accurate the arrow gets. I keep dropping my, kind
go. You keep
of
dropping
giving up
below
a
the
little bit.
camera. Yeah. There you go. Perfect.
There you go. So anyway,
So
the midpoint
basically, for those
is the
of you that
balance
are
point.
listening to this and not watching it on YouTube, Brett is holding up his he what you do. Well, let's talk about how you measure it too while we're doing this, and then you can finish. We can go down the road you're saying. But you're taking the exact middle of the arrow from the back of where the tip is screws into, basically the end of your arrow to the nock groove.
Correct.
Right?
And that's one thing
Okay.
I want to get through to a lot of people, because I get guys all the time. I just had a guy last night when I was doing one of his
Do
orders. He
carbon to
wanted
carbon
carbon to
or.
carbon. And I'm like,
Yeah.
arrow length is back of point, which is the end of the arrow, where the head screws in to the nock groove, the throat
Right.
of the nock, which is where the string sits in your nock. Measure from where your string sits in the nock to the back of point. Or end of your arrow. That would be arrow length. And that's what we use to, I mean, guys use other stuff. That's what we use to calculate arrow length. It's the definition in the ammo regulations, if I'm not mistaken. And
Right.
so we use that for everything to keep it simple.
Cool.
And I tell guys, I even write on the invoices when guys are asking for certain stuff, I'm like, we'll do it, but the back of point, the throat of nock, that is arrow length.
There you go.
So when you get that, so if this is a 30-inch arrow, the midpoint would be at 15 inches. Half of 30. And then the FOC forward of center is where the balance point is, the distance to the front of the arrow when you add a point. So the heavier the point you put on, the further your forward of center balance point is, and it's calculated as a percentage of overall arrow length.
Right.
So a 30-inch arrow, if you're 3 inches in front of your midpoint, it'd be 3/3, it'd be 10%.
Right.
So if you're 9 inches, you'd be 30%.
So
So and you
basically,
don't have a
the
balance point.
math is whatever, how many inches you are divided by the overall length of your arrow.
Yeah, super simple. And the guys are
Yeah.
like, "Oh, I need a calculator." I'm like, "Not really. If you, I mean, you could."
Well, I mean, when it's whole numbers, it's easy to do.
Yeah, with whole numbers, it's pretty easy. But you don't. And in fact, when we do the FOC, I used to just like grains. On arrows, split hairs, like my arrows need to be within 2 or 3 grains of each other. And, not really, unless you're, shooting
Yeah.
aspirin 50
Yeah, if you're
yards or something.
trying to, yeah, if you're shooting like what's that like Vegas 3D
Yeah,
spot or
that
something
kind
like
of thing,
that where
that
you
stuff
yeah.
starts mattering. But, Shooting the difference in small differences in grain weight and FOC is not. I mean, don't get me wrong. We do everything with Valkyrie to try to improve every little tiny itty bitty thing we do in the aero system to try to make it better.
Right.
But when guys, I mean, guys can do it. Guys like to sit there and try to manipulate little percentages of percentages to try to make stuff better. But we do that all
Yeah.
for you pretty much with our system.
Yeah.
And then, but it's
Okay,
really
so.
tough when. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I took you off what you were saying before to kind of explain this because I didn't want to get too far down the road of people not know what the
Yeah,
hell we're
forward.
talking
So
about.
the, so yeah, so yeah, the forward to center, the higher the forward to center we go, and then we were messing when we were going with the weight forward stuff. Ashby started doing some post bone breaching tests. I know a lot of guys say it's not scientific, but I mean, but there's really no test medium
Right.
available anywhere for any, not even forensics or FBI have one to test penetration and stuff like that. So you pretty much have to go off of some guy that wrote down everything that happened with thousands of shots, even in live and dead animals. I mean, you're going to get
Right.
a general idea of what's going on. So I think he has quite a bit of credibility since he recorded everything. And there's some stuff he didn't do that or consider about shaft drag and things like that. But we can go way into the weeds if you want.
I actually want to talk about that. I want to talk about some of the other things, like squaring off arrows, stuff like that. Like people that don't even think about that
Yeah.
knocks. I mean, all these things
Well, the
that could
square in the
possibly.
back end is huge. You know, one of the arrows we use, sometimes we used to use over 50% of the back ends were not square. So you're not pushing the arrow straight ahead. You're just kicking yourself in the teeth right off the bat because when that knock is sitting, if the back end's not square, you got the knock sitting in there. But when you push on the knock, it's going to turn it. It's going to move the shaft
Right.
one way or the other. And, especially with a fixed blade broadhead, that would like crush. I mean, accuracy be
I
thrown
always equate that to if you ever tried pushing a car tire, if you get straight behind it and you push it straight, it'll roll straight. But as soon
out.
as you kind of give a little bit too much to one side or the other, it starts wobbling and it falls over.
That's
So.
exactly what happens with your arrow if the back ends are not square. So, just little things like that. I mean, if we even square the arrow before we put the sleeves on them.
What are you doing to square the arrows? Like, what's
We
your.
have
You have a
I
jig set
have
up or.
another machine thing I've developed, but it's not out yet.
Oh, okay.
It's called Aerosmith, but it's just like oh, the guy from Fire Knock has a PAPS thing. It's a little you just rub on a arrow spinner and you put up a flat block of sandpaper or something and use it to square your arrow.
Yeah.
You can do that at home.
Everything I've ever seen, I've never seen it. There isn't a production because everybody's I've ever seen has all been a homemade, like style one. Or does somebody
Yeah,
make a
mine's versus
square?
ours come out, but G5 has a little a cheapy little $30 one, a handheld arrow squaring device.
Okay, I didn't know they had one. Interesting.
No, we're coming out with that, and in fact, some of the guys that see it are like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "Well, it's an Aerosmith that I designed because I needed it. I mean, how do you make an
Yeah.
arrow if you don't have arrow squared stuff?" And And so in the spine, we kind of pick shafts now that don't have a hole. And most of the arrow shafts these days, the spine is so minimal, especially with a weight forward design on the whole arrow platform, that indexing to spine is almost, guys are like floating them in bathtubs and stuff trying to find the spine. I'm like, hey, if you got to work that hard to find a spine in your arrow,
Yeah.
probably not going to matter a whole lot, especially if you build a stable platform. So.
Yeah.
With the higher FOC, it seems to be a lot more forgiving. Once we get around 20%, I mean, if the arrow, wherever the arrow is pointing, if you're tuned, is where it's going. And so that's kind of one of the, we're test actually testing penetration with a high weight forward. And just notice once we got up around 20 that the groups seem to shrink.
Yeah.
And then we start going, hey, let's go a little higher. And then every time we went higher and higher, the groups just seemed to go. I mean, it was just weird. And when guys shoot it, especially with compounds at long range, as
Right.
long as you keep the weight moderate, it's a different flight path. It looks
Oh,
different. It's strange, and it hits the target a lot different too.
I noticed that. So, guys, I've been experimenting with this because I have a hunt in Oregon, and I'm not allowed to use Schwacker's, can I'll use a expandable. So I started kind of going down this road and looking at stuff. And I have been fiddling with it already because I with my traditional archery stuff, I don't shoot expandables, and I shoot heavy FOC and heavier arrows and whatnot. But the arrow flight, you could definitely tell when it comes out that it corrects itself very quickly. And it's more like, and I don't know if it's also because it's going slower and you could see it better. That might be part of it. But I don't know. I don't know what the, I don't even know how to explain it. It doesn't have it quite as, even though it's not as fast, it doesn't have the same kind of arc where
Different trajectory. Yeah.
yeah, I feel like it's like
It's
flatter and then it drops like
got a slower arc to it. It's funny
yeah,
because I just had
exactly.
a guy
Thank you.
out the other day. He was running his standard arrow setup, you know, with the heavier stuff like a full metal jacket or an Axis or something, 100 grain head with blazer vanes. I mean, the typical arrow setup. Yeah, but his grain weight was like 490
Right.
overall. He's like almost 500. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do what our Valkyrie system. With about the same, it was about 10 to 15 grains heavier, and we're shooting at 50 or 60 yards, and you could see at about 45 yards with his current arrow, those blazer vanes would kind of kick in, and his arrow would just start dropping about 45 yards. And the Valkyrie arrow was coming out a little bit heavier, a little bit slower. You couldn't really notice the slowness though. All you could see was where the other arrow was dropping at 45. They both had the same point of impact. But the other arrow was not dropping at in the last 15 yards like that. It was coming out slower, but it was dropping slower also. And it was just, and he was like, "God, look at that! You could, and he, you could totally see it." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know. That's the way. I figure in layman's terms, the only way I could describe it is that the head, the arrow dampens quicker, no doubt, with especially with the light back end." And we try to minimize the fletching and all that stuff, save weight in the back, so it dampens. I mean, out of the bow, that our arrows just, I mean, just boom, and I don't know how many feet it is, but it's almost instantaneous. They dampen out. They're not keeping that oscillation going, creating more drag
Right. And
downrange.
I've heard it described like this a couple times, where if your arrow weight is more evenly distributed throughout the whole shaft, let's say the total weight, it's just if you tied a rock to a stick and threw the stick, and then instead of that, getting a bigger rock, let's say that whole system right there was 500 grains, this rock and the stick, and the rock in the front of the stick when is like a 3-inch rock, let's say. Okay, but the whole thing is 500. On the high FOC, it's like a 6-inch rock with a string connected to it. So it's actually pulling the arrow with it as opposed to being pushed by the arrow. Does that make sense?
That's exactly how I describe what's happening and why it goes through. They stay straighter through animals like glancing blows off a bone, oblique impacts, or the brush you can't see. So I mean, I could think of several animals that have gone away unscathed because of branches I didn't see. I mean, little green ones. I mean, just little twigs, tiny twig, and
I
had an
unfortunately had
opening in the
that.
brush, or thought I did, hit it, twang, boom, there goes the arrow. And so, and I explained that it's a lot easier, like at the shows and stuff, but when you have a light head, heavy shaft, the arrow is pushing the head. Okay, I'm on film. So the arrow is pushing the head. So if that point is coming at and it hits a branch or a bone, and the arrow's pushing, it gets knocked off course. So now it has a new direction. The arrow is pushing in that direction. So, because the arrow is put, when the head is pulling the shaft, the head is pulling that shaft through the animal, it gets knocked off course. It may get knocked off an inch or whatever, but it's still pulling straight ahead. So it keeps going straight. And it's totally odd. I tested it for like a month shooting through brush at my house with broadheads, with fixed blade broadheads, shooting through like fir boughs, Scotch broom, green stuff, not like half inch dry stobs, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff like you guys have down there in the desert.
Yeah. I should do that shit all the time. With coyotes, that's my. You almost always have to shoot through something.
But the wispy stuff, not. I mean, it doesn't. It might get moved over an inch or two or three, but it still maintains its direction. That's one of the big advantages of a high FOC, where the head is pulling the arrow, and that seems to me to be, and it's kind of is congruent with what Ashby found on his post bone breaching penetration at that 19%, 20% area right in there. Mm-hmm. It's where all the FOC seemed to be from the low stuff all the way up to that point on his post bone breaching stuff where you're changing direction of the penetration.
Right.
Nothing seemed to change it with keeping arrow weight the same and everything the same, just changing FOC until he hit at that threshold of 18 or 19. I don't know what, I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but we just say 20s, it's close. And all of a sudden there was a substantial jump in post bone breach penetration. And then for every 1% above that, he got another 10% penetration depth. So, and it's, well, I was talking with a guy the other day about, well, it's only 1% FOC, but once you get up over that 20%, it's really hard.
Right, it's exponential. 1%
of a ton. It's a ton. It's, and the higher you go, it's adding like a grain or two to the back, all of a sudden, well, 20% is not too bad. You got to add a few to the front to make up for the one or two in the back. But once you get up to the super high stuff, like on your trad setups, those can get, we can't do it with compounds yet, but with trad stuff, we can get about 30% and higher. But then if you add...
Is there a point of diminishing returns with FOC? I mean, if you added like 50%?
Not with trad stuff. Okay. Haven't found it yet. As long as you can keep your overall arrow weight. You can't build an arrow that... I mean, to go... Yeah. Some guys are shooting 30, 31%. I was shooting, hunting with 30%. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult, especially with the high-performance bows.
Yeah.
Because they require... And their center
they
shot...
They need stronger... They don't make a light enough arrow that's that strong, basically.
That's stiff, yeah. Well, they do kind of, but they're so brittle that you can't hunt with them.
I mean, if they I was going to say, you could buy those $400... What the hell? Doesn't Easton make those like super?
They had some. Victory had some that were they were a little bit bigger diameter, but they were super thin walled, stiff as heck. And those things were awesome for frontal impacts.
Yeah,
they just bounce off stuff. Like you just shoot steel plates, they bounce. The instant you move that to a slightly oblique impact, they freaking exploded like a bomb.
Oh wow!
So, but because they're just too brittle, but
got it.
So we're getting off target a little bit, but
sorry.
The high FOC stuff is pretty, it's pretty interesting. And the delivery platform was something that, like when we started testing, I was like, I can't believe guys aren't doing it. But I think, especially the target guys shooting the 20 yard, I'm not a big target guy, but I was like, because when you gob the weight up front,
right,
and you point the arrow at the bullseye, you could do almost anything. Torque the bow, torque the string, whatever. If it's pointed at that one, that bullseye when you let go, it is going there. I mean, because that head is just pulling all that stuff. You know, the higher the FOC, it's pretty crazy.
Hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right hand corner you'll see a green button that says become a patron, or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button, become a patron, from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. I'd like to add to that value by adding some bonus episodes that are going to be just for the patrons only. I'm going to release a few that are strictly for those of you who have contributed to the podcast. it really goes a long way. And I want to say it again, that even $1 a month, pledging $1 a month, $12 a year may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show. And I really appreciate it. And I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening. And let's get back to this episode.
So along the lines of what you've been doing, what you came across is you got this center pin technology that I thought is pretty cool. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that and why'd you come up with that?
That all stemmed from the quest for the ultimate hunting arrow, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And we started years ago with the 5/16. You know, we used gold tip hunters, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And gold tip, the velocities. But we built, and gold tip has them now, the longer, I actually built longer inserts for the gold tips.
Mm-hmm.
And they have them now. But they're almost twice as long, because at that time I was screwing, taking a piece of all thread and grinding off one of the collars on the insert, screwing them together and stuffing them in the shaft so you'd have two inserts, so I could get about 2 inches of depth inside the shaft, then putting a piece of aluminum arrow over the end for strength, okay. Just because I wanted stronger up front. Then those, we used gold tip because they were so tough. I mean, that's, we wanted the toughest arrow and not overweighted and all that stuff. So then we started doing it then. That was a long time ago. And then we went to the, started thinking about shaft drag, because we're trying to remove, with the Valkyrie system, we try to remove all of the resistance we can from the tip all the way through the whole system. So, and shaft drag is important. A lot of guys talk about it. Ashby did it. His general consensus on shaft diameter was it has to be the same or smaller than the ferrule of the broadhead. And if it was smaller, you get a little bit better penetration than if it's even. And if the shaft was larger than the ferrule, it would decrease penetration. But one of the things that he didn't talk about or think about that I know of is shaft drag becomes super important no matter what, just the size of the shaft when an animal's moving. We went to the axe. I'm talking about how we got to the point we're using micro diameter.
Right.
5/16, went to the axis style, like the Easton axis.
Mm-hmm.
The 204 inside diameter for smaller shaft, less wind drift. And then we were going to build parts for the axis style arrows without the, with the hidden insert. I mean, the hidden insert is a great design. Mm-hmm. It's the whole basis for that 204 inside diameter was the hidden insert. I mean, that was
right.
The half outs kind of destroy that whole, the whole idea behind that mm-hmm. size shaft, in my opinion. But, anyway, shaft drag on animals and penetration and wind drift and everything, the smaller diameter you go, the less wind drift, the less drag you have going through an animal, especially when it's moving.
Mm-hmm.
So like with the whitetails or the coos deer down there, those babies are not standing still when the arrow hits them. And right. So whitetails and almost even elk, they're usually wheeling, you know, and, that's where shaft drag seems to come into a very significant play. And the micro diameter has a tremendously less surface area than even a axis style arrow. It's exponentially smaller, just even mm-hmm. though it's like a 9/32 or whatever in diameter, but it's surface area. So the math formula is all that. It adds it up, and it's a lot
right.
more. So, and that's one thing we noticed with the micros. Axis was better on shaft drag, and then the micros, when these things go through them, we're not even sure what happened. I get guys all the time running the weight forward with the super skinnies.
Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing. I'm like, well, it was looking good, but I'm not sure. The arrow was going perfect, and then it was just gone. Just poop, gone. It just, and you're like, so, and usually it goes through so fast with the way our head's designed, the shaft drag and everything, it doesn't really, you don't ever, almost never see the tail end of the arrow kick on impact at all.
Right.
It's just gone. So, because it maintains its trajectory or the direction it's going. So we knew we wanted the micro diameter platform for hunting just because of the wind drift and penetration benefits.
Nice.
But we were getting frustrated with the half outs and the outserts and stuff up front on the micros because that was just the weak point. They flew great. They flew awesome. I mean, the micro diameter, the first time I shot them, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to shoot these arrows. And but then I noticed my group size growing on the first dozen I got. I'm like, why is my group size growing? And my points were wobbly, shooting foam. I'm like, what the heck? I can put them on the spinner and they're flopping around. And I'm like, so I grabbed it and I straightened it out with the aluminum pin half out thing. I straightened it with my fingers and I'm like,
Well, that ain't
gosh,
good.
I don't know about that. I don't think that would handle a bone or something. And then so I got some steel ones and they worked a little better, but if you hit anything that wasn't, they bend or break. I mean, and I was blowing through money like crazy because I wanted to shoot those things. But then for a couple of years, then I started making my own outserts. And I mean, I just said, I'm making it for me. You know, I need something. I want a little heavier up front. I was making brass outserts, a little thicker that won't bend or break, but it was still breaking right behind the outsert. If you hit like just the hard plastic in the Reinhardt target that holds in the vitals and the 3Ds. If you glanced inside that foam, you'd get them, they would break right behind the outsert sometimes. So, and the arrows are expensive. So, but I knew that the micro diameter was the platform I wanted to deliver a broadhead for hunting with the weight forward system. There's no doubt. I mean, it's better in almost every category except for the strength up front. And so I was putting carbon pin, and there's guys building them right now, I think, with carbon rods going in, then putting an outsert over top to strengthen up the weak point right behind the outsert. But I did that even with bamboo and steel and stuff, and it doesn't work like you think. They still break right there. So then I was sitting there scratching my head going, how do I deliver the broadhead with the weight forward system with this shaft? And I just stewed on it forever. I'm like, there's got to be a way to hook this weight forward head to these shafts and not have this be a weak point. Because I mean, that in fact, in the Northwest, they even quit distributing one of the micro diameters because guys got so mad at it, they just quit buying them. Because they were like, you buy a dozen, you're out of them in like a week, and then you go pay another $200 for another dozen. It was a bad deal. But anyway, but the micro diameters, there had to be a way. And then I was looking at the head, so I brought one. So there's an old school, regular converter point that Fred Bear designed and patented years ago, a lot of years ago. But you have the shaft engagement here, 204 right here. That's the hidden insert size on the shaft. And that's, but I was trying to think about how to screw that into this skinny shaft. And pretty soon it hit me. I'm like, why are we trying to screw in old school technology that Fred Bear designed like 80 years ago on the old, micro flight or whatever he had back then, some fiberglass shafting, but it had to be screwing. But with these modern shafts, I'm like, why don't we just make a modern head that screws into modern shafting and actually works together, works with it. You know, we're trying to screw in, it's like old school stuff in modern technology. We need modern technology to screw into the modern shafting to get the benefit out of it. And so took me about, actually only took me about a week, but not to come up with that. But then we have the center pin, about 2.5 inches of shaft engagement. We have an outsert, it's a sleeve that slides down over the end of the shaft because we did a bunch of frontal impact testing on carbon, all sizes of carbon. And so I was actually testing glues before I had a clue that it wasn't the glue. It was because of the
Got it.
sleeve. Nothing works. No glues work if you don't have, for mushrooming and stuff on a frontal impact, unless you have it contained inside of a collar of some sort. the carbon. So that was my first conclusion of testing, and I spent a lot of money, and that was all retail stuff too.
Yeah.
So we have the sleeve that goes over the end of the shaft, the microdiameter shaft. We're trying to fortify the front end so we can use these just like all the other shafts, or actually better. They're actually a little bit stronger. And then the pin slides down inside, goes past the sleeve. There's rubber bushings on the end, so if you do hit something that starts to try to snap your shaft in half, the first thing the inside of the carbon hits is a rubber bushing. It okay. dampens the blow and transfers the energy back here. So if you do hit rocks and stuff, we usually break them back in the middle of the arrow. Then the front end's always good. So then it just screws in. So now you have steel pin or titanium on the titanium stuff.
Right.
It goes back behind the sleeve. You've got it's encased in an aluminum or steel outsert. So you have the outsert holding the carbon. You have the carbon tubing. And you have a steel pin fortifying everything on the inside. It's triple layer. Everything works together. Nice. And when I came up with this in my head, I'm like, somebody's got to have it. I'm yeah. like, there's no way that one of these aero companies doesn't have the patent on that and they're just holding out on it. Because it's so simple and easy. It works perfectly with the micro diameter. This slides right in. We use fine threads so that there's no rattling loose.
Mm-hmm.
The rubber bushings on the tail of the center pin also keep it from rattling loose. So we don't have – that is kind of a pet peeve. There's a few things that are a pet peeve of mine over the years. One is heads coming loose.
Oh, God, that drives me insane.
I mean, this 1 year in Nevada, I chased these bucks for 8 hours. It kept getting up and moving. 8 hours. I'm in my sock feet. Finally get my shot. It's almost dark. I missed by 3 feet. My arrow goes, rattles off. My head had come unscrewed from all the knocking and unknocking. And my head was, I couldn't believe, I mean, 30 yards broadside. It's ready to go. And I missed by 3 feet.
Well, yeah. I got a similar story I'm going to throw in there real quick before you keep on going. So what made me switch... I wouldn't touch a broadhead that you had to build, you know, like where the blades would come out, was because of that.
Yeah.
I was hunting with Dwayne Adams, and I had busted my ass to get in on this freaking deer. And I draw back on him. I got him broadside at 50 yards, big freaking 4x4. And I just happened to glance at my head, and none of the blades were there. They had fallen out because it loosened up enough. It was, yeah. I think it was a Wacom. Yeah, it was a Wacom broadhead. And all the blades fell out. I drew down, I stuck that in my quiver, put another arrow on, and he took a step into the bush. And at that time, there was two other hunters closing in. And Dwayne's talking to me on the headset. I had a radio in my ear, and he's like, "Hey, those hunters they're still stalking that buck. They're coming in. They're closing in on you." And one of them I don't know what the hell they were thinking, but they weren't very sneaky, and they busted this freaking buck out. And I was like, "You gotta be shitting me!" I lost my shit on them, and I was so pissed about the freaking arrow. Plus, I was building more arrows back at the truck, and I. Can cut my goddamn finger. I was so pissed that day. I was a mess.
And that's one of the things I noticed with the 832 threads that are on there too. They're just
yeah.
It's going if you don't put like
a rubber
Loctite or something on there, they're coming loose.
Yeah.
With vibration, and I notice it all the time when I'm building arrows and stuff. I mean, with ours, I don't ever notice it anymore because ours just seat and they're there.
These ones with the little, I don't know if you can see that, they have the little rubber deal cut into it, a little groove with the rubber O-ring.
Yeah.
They're meant, and these don't come out.
Those will work pretty good, but here's the problem with that. You just destroyed your structural integrity on that thing for some
other really? Stuff. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you hit stuff, but I'm saying on a broadhead or something like that, that would be, because we try to fortify the front end for worst case scenario. And so... But ours, we have the O-rings just like that, except they're clear in the back.
Yeah, way back. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, everything up front is just solid. Everything's solid up front. So, I guess you can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I could see it, right? I could see it. I don't know if everybody else could see it.
Yep. So
I
there's
got
your second
one
one.
right in front of me.
So, but yeah, that's it. And then we make them, down to the target tip's down to 100 grains. Then the sleeves only weigh 22 grains in the aluminum, 21 or 22 grains, which is the lightest out there. I mean, all the standard outserts and all the other stuff is about 40 grains, I think.
Okay.
So, but it's pretty neat.
Cool.
That's the center pin. That's the foundation of everything we do here at Valkyrie.
Nice.
Well, then we got the patent on it, and I just was amazed that the guys are still trying to just figure out a way to connect heads using the old school stuff. But if you look at the shaft engagement between the two, it's if you're gonna looking for structural integrity, this one goes in about two, I don't think it's 2.5 inches or something. And the
Wow.
standard converter point's in there. Even if you have it beefed up front, you're looking at 5/8 of an inch or so, maybe 3/4 of an inch.
Right.
And so it's just a little bit better shaft engagement. And it keeps you straighter, it goes
Curious.
right down the center, fits in almost flush inside, so that you're almost perfectly straight every time. I mean, it really can't be bent off center or anything like that.
Nice.
It goes right with the center of the axis of the arrow. So
Awesome.
that's it. That's the Valkyrie center pin system and our weight forward delivery platform. And that allows us to increase our accuracy and lethality downrange at distance. So, and we keep our profile low in the wind. It's awesome. So, and I noticed you had a little bit of wind drift the other day we were talking.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. I don't know if we talked about it after, but when you were running the heavy stuff, you're dipping down. What are you shooting? About 255 feet a second or something?
No, it was right at 260. It was
You're at 260.
259, 260. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you're getting about 4 inches at 70 yards, you thought? Yeah.
Yeah, 4 inches at 70 yards. But I mean, I want to say it was probably blowing at least 20 miles an hour, though.
So, which isn't bad. But I was thinking about that because most of the time we don't really aim off a whole lot at long range on the cross, but we still like that threshold to keep the weight forward around 20% plus,
Yeah.
but still like that feet per second. The sweet spot's right around 270 to 280, right in there.
Right.
Because a couple things happen when you start running slower arrows. It takes your arrow longer time to leave the bow in a crosswind, and your bow blows as soon as you re As soon as you release the tension, the bow's blowing.
Right.
It's
Yeah,
moving.
yeah.
And I've tested that. I've tested that at home too, shooting out of my bedroom on a severe crosswind. And with these weight forward arrows, because I thought my bow was blowing. As soon as you release the bow, anyway. And then
Yeah.
so I stood in my bedroom out the back and put a target out there. It was a stormy day. It was blowing about 20. And I'm inside, so my bow won't blow.
Right.
Shoot out the target. As soon as my arrow hits that wind, it freaking jacks sideways, hits the bullseye. And I was like, that's what I thought. It's freaking my bow's blowing. So
Yeah.
the slower your arrow, the longer it takes to get out of the bow, the longer time it's in the air.
Yep.
So, and then, but it's a happy medium. You can't, I mean, a super fast arrow is going to blow like a leaf.
Yep,
But
because it's too light, yeah.
it's too light. But with the weight forward and the way it works, and the speed, if you increase the speed a little bit, it probably would bring that a little bit tighter. Because
Okay.
it's out of the bow quicker and it's in the air less time. So
Sweet.
all things being equal. But that's one of the things that I was, because I don't, when stuff like that happens, I think about it a lot. I'm like, why is he getting 4 inches at 70? He shouldn't be. But then you're a little bit below that speed
Yeah.
threshold too, so it's pushing you off a little bit. But just little
Yeah.
things like
Well,
that
that
guys
and I'm
don't think
shooting the
about.
Tri-X that I'm shooting that those out of the Tri-X, and because it's a lighter bow, it's definitely I feel it like it's harder in wind for it moves around more in the wind than it than a one of my heavier bows would for sure.
Yeah.
So.
No, those I love the Matthews would love the weight forward.
Yeah, they
They're
do.
one of our easiest ones to deal with. I mean, they just gobble it up. It's crazy. But they have really really nice knock travel.
I got a question about my arrow that you built me, actually. The little tape on the back here. Is
Turbulator.
that is what is that?
That's a turbulator. How come we only have one?
Because I got It got messed up. It got messed up, and I just peeled it off.
Yeah.
What does the Tribulator do?
So the Tribulator,
oh,
most guys can't tell any difference.
Okay.
They put Tribulator tape, they put on glider wings. It's another one of those things I got from Ed Ashby. He, when he was talking about, he did a seminar at one of the at Pope and Young or a banquet or something about fletch tuning, tuning your fletching, reducing.
Okay.
Anyway, which was a huge thing because at that time I didn't go to that banquet, but I'd been reducing fletching, trying to figure out what the threshold was for, you know, shooting weight forward with broadheads and stuff. To reduce until you started getting the barrel roll,
mm-hmm.
back it up. So, but he did a whole thing on that, on how he does it. And then he added the Tribulator tape, which is the idea behind the Tribulator tape is what they put Tribulator tape on glider wings.
Okay.
To rough up the smooth air. Cause I guess smooth air as it's going along the shaft can get sticky and create friction.
Okay.
So, these kind of rough it up, like, kind of like a golf ball does with the dimples.
Got it.
Allows it to go further, like a ping pong ball, then going. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
But they put it on glider wings to decrease friction from the smoother. And so it's minute. Most guys say, I can't tell any difference. But it's, I think if it's a little bit, it helps.
Mm-hmm.
We do it. And you only need one.
Okay.
We put two on just so, I mean, that's like kind of our Valkyrie signature.
So it looks cool.
It looks kind of cool.
It's like so, stickers on a car, extra 5 horsepower.
Yeah, that's right. And you can do the turn, but you can do this, speaking of that, pinstripe tape at the auto store.
Okay.
You just get 1/8 inch pinstripe tape, any color you want, at Napa Auto or wherever like that, 3 inches long, wrap it on itself. It'll stick up a little bit, disturbs the air, and it's supposed to decrease friction and increase control of your veins.
Okay.
So just it's slight. It's something that decreases friction because we're always shooting a little bit slower arrow anyway.
Right.
Because of the weight forward. You know, we make moderate weight arrows anywhere from like the mid 400s and up. So they're not excessively heavy arrows. And most guys running like full metal jackets and stuff are already shooting you know, upper 400s to low 500s anyway, overall arrow weight.
Yeah, yeah,
so we're
yeah.
just taking that heavy shaft weight and moving it forward.
Got
so
it.
We can build that 500 grain or round 500 grain arrow with like 20% FOC.
Nice.
I mean, that's pretty much our signature, what we do. But,
sweet.
Yeah, the Tribulator and four fletch.
Four
we
fletch.
Four fletch everything.
Yeah, and what's your reasoning behind that?
No indexing. For hunt, everything we do is for hunting.
Excuse me.
We run the four minis, a little bit lower profile, a little less wind drift and stuff.
Yeah, those are what, AAE style? What are these? Or are
we're using the AAE Pro Max.
Okay.
Right now. We're working on a new vein, too, for down the road. But it's similar. These make a slight bit of noise, which I'd rather have them be quiet. But the drag... We've tried these against mini blazers in the four fletch. These, actually the Vane Tech mini HPs, which are a little bit lighter than the blazer and minis.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little higher profile. They weigh less, but these have less drag down range. Same point of impact at 80 yards.
Got
so
it.
We went with these.
Nice.
And the four fletch, we don't need to index our arrow at all because the spine or anything like that. You just, like if you have to reload and get a second shot, you don't want to be looking, you know, trying to
figure out where
click it on and shoot. And so that's what we try to build all that stuff into our system, just make you more efficient, give you a better chance in worst case scenarios. We're always trying to prepare. Our whole system is built around trying to prepare, doing everything you can before you release the arrow.
Right. Control the things you can control so that when you're faced with things you can't control, you're better suited. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, the instant you release the arrow, you're done. It's over. So everything you did before that's going to come into play. Maybe. It might not, but it might. I mean, if you have chinks in your armor, it seems I've had pretty bad luck with that stuff, and it's caused me to build this system. But if there's ever a weak point in my system, it always showed up.
Yeah.
It always did. You know, especially on a backcountry hunt or something like that. It was like the first day. I mean, But anyway, we try to take out all the weak spots in our aero system so that we do have the best chance possible when we finally get that shot. Because in, like where we hunt in Oregon, pretty rough. We're not like, we don't get 9 deer tags a year. We get like one.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
you hunt all season to maybe get one shot. So, and
No,
same
I
thing on the elk. It's pretty tough. So when your gear fails on you, it's pretty devastating because you just trained and waited and practiced all year for that one shot, and it's pretty heartbreaking. So
Yeah,
that's what happened.
no, for sure. I mean, nobody likes to bust their ass, and especially if, I mean, it's okay, most of your stuff is over the counter over there, but like if you wait like 5, 6 years or 10 years for a freaking tag, I mean,
Yeah.
there's nothing worse than.
Well, in Arizona, yeah, or like Arizona, where I got like 17, 18 years I've been putting in down there. So
Really? You got 18 points right now?
in Arizona, yeah, and Utah.
What freaking unit are you putting in for?
I'm
You
not
haven't
putting in
drawn.
for anything yet.
Oh, okay.
I didn't put
Got
in
it.
points lately because I've been building Valkyrie, and hopefully we can get something going down there.
Well, let's get you put in next year and get your freaking elk.
Yeah, we're gonna get, hopefully we can get one pretty soon, but I want to get it on the on a video for Valkyrie. So
We can do that.
yeah, but they got some pretty good elk down there. No, I've been holding out on those just because we're building this thing. I mean, I don't even know if I have time right now
Yeah.
with the Valkyries taking off pretty good, and we're working a lot. And last year I got 4 days of hunting in, the last four here in Oregon.
Jesus.
I didn't want anybody. Well, I had orders come in. I'm like, I'm not leaving guys hanging
Yeah.
to go hunting. So, and right now we got some back orders going right now, but that's when the season comes, man. We got to make sure everybody has what they need.
Well, cool.
So.
Awesome, man. I think that's gives some guys some food for thought and what they can
Food for
look at
thought.
their
Yeah,
system.
there's schools of thought on both ends, but the way forward, one of the biggest things, John, is what guys do, and that's why we sell the test kits.
Yeah.
Because I want to get, and we don't really, I mean, the test kits, they're $50 for a 2 hour test kit that I'm doing a little ad, but you have to try it.
No,
And
you
you guys
can.
just need to shoot
Absolutely.
it. That's the hardest thing for us to do because guys can theorize and philosophize and say, oh, that thing's going to drop like a rock with 20% FOC, and it's just not the case.
No. If it's
And
not, if it's
so.
done right, it's not, yeah.
Not if you build the arrow correctly. You can't just gob on like I did years ago and just gob weight up front. Leave, because I was at that time I was shooting a trad bow with like 4 or 5 inch parabolics.
Yeah. I'm like,
Get a
come
big
on.
old 12 grain print shaft. Anyway, so I gobbed on a bunch of weight up front, and that thing would just at 25 yards drop like a rock. I mean, it was just like meep, boom, off the table. And that's when I missed that big old bull, and I was like done. And then when I came back and revisited the weight forward, I actually thought about how the arrow performs, and the higher FOC you go, the less fletching you need.
Right.
So even with the fixed blade, I mean, I can shoot bare shafting with the target tips. And most guys can, but even with the weight forward, it's pretty. You can shoot pretty far with no feathers.
That's cool.
So because the head's pulling the arrow,
Yep.
it's a lot more stable. But so that's one of the things that with the test kits, just to try it. It's funny because when I have guys come over, I'm like, hey. These guys will shoot the 200 grains, and they're getting that upper 400 arrow with their 70-pound compound, which is common, 28-inch draw.
Right.
I'm like, hey, you want to shoot a 300-grain head? And they're like, yeah. Yeah, because how
Yeah,
often do you get to shoot a 300-grain head, right?
never.
Shoot, they'll
Spear
send you
chicken.
50 yards, and it's only, 4 or 5 inches below it, like 40, 50 yards. And they're like,
That's
no way. I'm
crazy.
like, yeah, but you got to try it, That's why we
Yeah.
do the test kits, and so you guys can send stuff. We make heads all the way up to 350 grains, but that's for
That's nuts.
specialists.
That's nuts.
But we tried to make parts so you don't have to add a bunch of stuff inside your shaft. And that's kind of was another pet peeve of mine. Is like, why do we have to add all this junk in the arrow? Why didn't somebody just make the parts we need so we could just screw on? And that's one of the things with Valkyrie. We just wanted the sleeve and the head. That's it. Two pieces. There's nothing else. The sleeve
Right.
glues on, head screw in. They're all weighted, so you don't have to add weights.
Right.
And all the weight is put in here to. We use the weight to add steel and strength and integrity. Everything works for itself. We just don't add idle weights anywhere on our arrow.
Right.
So everything works together. If we add weight, it's going to increase some sort of accuracy or structural integrity or lethality in some way.
Nice.
We try to think of everything. So
Sweet.
that's
Well,
it. That's Valkyrie Archery in a nutshell.
where can our listeners find out more about you?
ValkyrieArchery.com, ValkyrieArchery. ValkyrieArchery.com is our website, and we're on it. We don't post a ton on Instagram, but it's Valkyrie.Archery on Instagram. We got some stuff with some videos on YouTube, instructional videos on YouTube, and a little bit on Facebook. And we're getting more and more information on our website. But we built the website before we had the patent on
Okay.
the center pin system, so it's kind of we didn't want to post to put a bunch of stuff on the website. We're working on that now, but
Okay.
because everybody's like, "Well, how do I see where it works?" And but that's on. I just posted a video again today on the center pin system and how it works on Instagram. And obviously, if they're listening to this, or they could watch it on here too, we did a pretty good description of it. But yeah, we're working on the videos for that, and we'll do some more testing videos too. But like I say, the website was built before the patent, so we were a little secretive. We didn't want
Yeah.
to just go throwing it out there all the way. So
Nice.
now that everything's been a couple years, and so if guys have questions, they can call too,
Sweet.
or email or that kind of thing. We try to answer everything within 24 hours, so
Nice.
it can be pretty hectic. All
Cool,
right.
brother. Thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. I appreciate it.
Right. Well, thanks, John.
Yeah,
Been great.
Awesome, brother. Take it
Good
easy.
luck, and we'll see you. Hey, we'll see you in Oregon this year for those
Yeah.
movies.
Yeah. Are you gonna try to make a cameo when in camp or no?
I might. I've been invited with those guys for a couple years, and I haven't made it since yet.
Oh man.
So, but they got a couple. I tried getting a hold of them last year, but I had a big sucker going, and I couldn't get them. I needed Shannon
Yeah.
or Corey. I'm like, dude, I need you guys. And I knew right where
Yeah.
he was, and I just couldn't get him by myself. It was, I could, I'm not an awesome elk hunter. I'm not good like those guys. I'm pretty good. I get lucky once in a while, but those
Yeah.
guys, I just needed a good caller,
Nice.
and it would be a something. But it's hard to find those big ones too. But they're there on
They
public
are.
land. They're
Yeah.
there. They're just rough.
I tell people that all the time. I'm like, people are like, oh, what unit? Oh, I want to get a trophy unit. I'm like, listen, dude, especially here in Arizona, I'm like, there's a freaking 400 inch bull in every goddamn unit in the state. You just gotta work. I mean, they're not around every bush. Even the trophy units, they're not around every bush. You know, you gotta work. You gotta put time in, you know,
They're
if
there,
that's
but
what you want. If that's what you
that's
want.
one of the things that guys from reading the magazines and stuff. It's funny because guys are like, "Well, I'm not shooting anything unless it's 350 plus." I'm like,
Yeah, stupid stuff.
they don't make a lot of bulls that big, even the old
No.
ones. And the same, I noticed that with blacktail because I'm a huge
Yeah.
blacktail hunter.
Right.
Guys are like, "Well, I'm only going to shoot like 135." I'm like, they don't make
Yeah.
blacktails that big. I mean, only a few. Even the big. I mean, it's just like those are rare. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
even the old bucks, most of the deer don't get antlers that big.
Yeah.
And the muleys down there are probably the same way.
I
You
mean,
know, to get
you
a
can.
200 inch buck, I mean, that's just a special thing.
Yeah, they're not exactly.
Just
There
because a deer's
is
biting.
two. There is 200 inch bucks in probably every unit in the state, but
But they're hard
it's
to find.
not. Yeah, it's not like they're, you know, they're not a dime a dozen. You
No,
know, it's
so.
just anything else. Those are anomaly. That's what makes those things special. I mean, there are places in the country that you can go, but they're very few, very, very few, where you know you're going to see that caliber. I mean, like, for instance, like this strip. Okay, the Arizona Strip is one of those places that you know if you go and you spend a week up there that you're going to see a 190 and, you know, 180 inch or better buck for sure. But, you know, you go to
The strip. I know that's one of those things. They do have a bow
buck
tag in there.
cliffs or something like that. I'm
I
sorry,
got
go ahead.
piles of, I got piles of points for that
Yeah.
for the deer. Well, I don't know
Yeah.
if piles. It's not. It's like 18.
18 point.
That
I'm
even
not
get me anything
sh
anymore?
Yeah, it does. So the way Arizona works, I want to say on deer, because it's different for sheep, but I think deer and elk, 20% of the, you know what, I always get this wrong. 20% goes to max pool, or 10% goes to max pool. 20% of those goes to out of state, I believe. I got to, you know what? I got to relook at that. Don't quote me on that.
That'd be something. I got to look.
But you have a pretty good opportunity. If you have max points, you have a very good opportunity.
I don't think I have max points. I think I use.
I don't know what max points is for the strip, to be honest with you. I don't even look. I don't even pay attention to it, because for me to wait that long to hunt in my state with a rifle.
No, I was talking with the bow.
I know, but just.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I could draw a strip tag with the bow probably in eight or nine years, I think.
Yeah. So. That's one of those things. That's one of those things where I used to put it. Yeah, I still do, but I like to hunt an area you can hunt every year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, over the counter stuff. That's what, kind of where I'm leaning.
Well, so that's the beauty of here, though. You can hunt over the counter archery every year, and just keep putting in during the draw for those hard to thing, and you know, you just get your bonus point, and you know, eventually you'll have enough points, and you'll draw, or you know, you'll just get lucky. I mean, this guy's a draw with no points.
Yeah.
I mean, so I had a buddy of mine drew a sheep tag with 2 points.
Wow.
Desert sheep tag.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so anyhow. All right, man, let me let you go. I'm going to go take a nap. I'm tired.
Hopefully that, I don't know if you can.
You said you were moving. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's back orders. That's the first pile. The other pile, I'm about 120 behind right now.
Ah, man, just that means that things are going well.
Going all right. But yeah, I was up till 4 a.m. doing that stuff. So, hey, well, all right. Well, thanks, John. Appreciate it. Hopefully some guys will find some good information.
Oh, they will. And yeah, if you guys have any questions, he's a knowledgeable guy. Hit him up. Maybe he'll help you perfect your system out there. So.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature T-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food T-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.